Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
Natural gas is a hot topic. A spate of high-profile reports and a series of public hearings this month explore the pros and cons of this booming energy source. The Environmental Protection Agency is getting public input as it considers regulation for what's commonly called fracking. Hydraulic fracturing releases natural gas from deep in the earth by injecting water and chemicals into layers of shale. As EPA is hearing, fracking is also creating problems. Colorado resident Tracy Dahl held a vial of murky water as he spoke at the hearing in Denver. He blames a gas fracking operation for damaging his drinking well.
We are forced to travel almost 80 miles to obtain potable water. To have fought so long and hard to try to protect our water resources, in the end, to have to watch them be impacted regardless, it's been the most frustrating experience in my life.
Wyoming rancher John Fenton said his water is also contaminated.
I don't have a problem with the production of oil or natural gas or any of our other natural resources, but it shouldn't come at the expense and the degradation of the things that we truly cannot live without, our air, our water, and our health. The monetary gains, the jobs are nice, but we do have to look after the health and the basic human needs of everyone on this planet.
Stories like that got an even broader audience with the surprise success of a documentary film called Gasland.
Sometimes it bubbles and hisses when it comes out.
In one scene, tap water from a well apparently tainted by drilling catches fire.
Whoa.
A similar exploding tap water story has become legendary in Pennsylvania, where fracking is a front burner issue. The gas-rich Marcellus Shale Formation stretches from West Virginia north to upstate New York. A recent industry report estimates that gas could be worth $2 trillion. MIT also studied the prospects for natural gas. MIT Energy Initiative Director Ernie Moniz says part of its appeal is that it's less carbon intensive than other fossil fuels.
Gas really is a bridge to the low carbon future.
So on the one hand, a cleaner, abundant fuel. On the other, a threat to clean water. World Watch Institute Director Christopher Flavin's analysis finds the supply of natural gas coming online is a game changer for U.S. energy policy. Mr. Flavin says that allows us to think of gas as a long-term replacement for oil and coal.
Well, if you replace an existing coal-fired power plant with a new natural gas plant, you get about a two-thirds reduction in the carbon dioxide emissions. And since we get close to half of our total electricity from coal currently, you could envision shifting a large fraction of our electricity generating capacity and thereby getting a big reduction in emissions. Natural gas also produces a lot less of the more conventional pollutants that cause various kinds of lung damage and other human health problems. So across the whole range of environmental indicators, gas is superior to coal on almost every score. And the exciting thing about natural gas is it would also facilitate the development of the renewable resources. Things like solar and wind power are intermittent by nature, and you need to have a backup capacity and ideally a low carbon backup. Renewables and natural gas really fit together very well in that way. I would argue that the combination of gas and renewables could allow us to replace most, if not all, of our coal-fired electricity over the next 20 years.
So you're pointing to some really big potential benefits here, but most of what we hear are environmental downsides. People are really upset about fracking. Is there a bit of a split here within environmentalism?
Well, there's been this tremendous boom in shale gas development, and that rapid development of the industry has meant that many areas where there is not a solid regulatory structure in place, and I think also cases where the industry itself, many of the companies have not developed a solid environmental practices. This sort of, you know, gold rush type of boom mentality has meant that there are practices being employed that are, in fact, leading to, you know, various kinds of environmental problems, including a contamination of water supplies, unexpected blowouts of wells, air pollution, and just disruption from turning, you know, what had been a relatively pristine rural areas into sort of semi-industrial zones. One of the things the industry has been fighting for that I think really is not justified is that they have fought any requirement that they disclose the chemicals that are put into the water. And, you know, it simply is something that needs to be done. And certainly any chemicals that are found to be toxic or potential carcinogens should simply not be allowed to include in those hydrofracturing fluids.
There's a lot at stake here, isn't there, for the vested interests in the, especially in the electric utility area. What's the response from the coal lobby to this potential for serious large-scale switching over to another fuel?
Behind the scenes, the coal industry has been working very hard to really stop the development of natural gas generation in its tracks, arguing that the supplies are not really as large as what other analysts say, arguing that this is just really not a secure way to provide electricity. And really, this sort of effort by the coal industry, I think, is doing enormous environmental damage because coal is not only responsible for a very large fraction of our greenhouse gas emissions. It's really the replacing that coal is one of the simplest, cheapest things we could do in terms of reducing the impact on the climate. But coal is also responsible for a whole range of ecological and health problems. So I think that, you know, those environmentalists that are quick to condemn natural gas should really think very closely about the alternatives and perhaps think about joining a coalition of both environmental and clean energy groups that are working to ensure that gas is developed in the most responsible way so that it can actually play a productive role in a clean energy future.
World Watch Institute President Christopher Flavin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Coming up, the courageous life of a lady who wrote about chickens. That's just ahead on Living on Earth.
Support for the Environmental Health Desk at Living on Earth comes from the Cedar Tree Foundation. Support also comes from the Richard and Rhoda Goldman Fund for coverage of population and the environment, and from Gilman Ordway for coverage of conservation and environmental change. This is Living on Earth on PRI, Public Radio International.